Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly. This week, our very special guest is James Nestor, a San Francisco-based author and journalist who has written for Scientific American, Outside Magazine, The New York Times, The Atlantic, National Public Radio, and more. His latest book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, was released in May 2020 and became an instant New York Times and Wall Street Journal top 10 bestseller. In it, he explores the history of how we have lost the ability to breathe properly and why we're suffering from a long list of maladies as a result. These include snoring, sleep apnea, asthma, autoimmune diseases, and allergies. In this interview, James explains how changing the way you breathe can have a profound effect on your emotional and physical health. He relates how his research led him to understanding and practicing ancient breathing methods, even enlisting in a 21-day Stanford University experiment to have his nasal cavities and mouth tape shut. He also describes a simple and inexpensive breathing technique that can quickly produce significant returns in health and performance. Interviewing James this week is my MBT colleague, Clay Higgins. Clay is a mountain biker, fourth-generation funeral home owner, and was a client back in 2014. After transforming his health using ancestral health, Clay is now helping other people do the same. If you come to the front page of our website at nourishbalancethrive.com, you'll find a button to book a free starter session with Clay. During the session, he'll take a look at your history and share how we'd work with you. If you're not in the US, don't worry. Since we always work remotely, we can help you almost anywhere in the world. Just before we get into this week's episode, I want to thank everyone who so generously supports this podcast on Patreon. Without your support, we wouldn't be able to keep this podcast independent and free of ads. So thank you. And just a reminder, as a Patreon supporter, not only do you have my eternal gratitude, but also you get some really awesome gifts, including 20 to 35% discounts on all supplements we recommend when working with clients, which saves many of our supporters $50 to $100 a month over what they were previously paying on Amazon. So by supporting the podcast, they're actually spending less money each month. In addition to that, you'll also get access to our office hours, where my scientific director, Megan Hall, answers questions every week. You can submit all your own questions, as well as listening to the replays, covering everything from environmental pollutants to continuous glucose monitoring. We've worked really hard to make sure that the bonuses you get are actually way more valuable than what you pay, whatever level you choose to support us at. So if you'd like to support the podcast and get access to the discounts and office hours, just head over to mbt.link and sign up there. Again, that's nbt.link. Thank you so much. Now let's head over to this week's interview with James Nestor.
Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Clay Higgins. Today I'm joined by James Nestor, author and journalist for Outside, Scientific American, The Atlantic, and more, covering science and extreme sports. Today I've got James on the podcast to talk about his latest book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. After reading chapter one of this book, I knew I had to talk to this guy. So, James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Before we jump into the book, we were talking right before. Could you give us a little background on maybe what led you towards this? There's definitely a theme woven in your writings.
Sure. It was actually two things. I had been having a lot of breathing difficulties years ago. This was probably 11 years ago now. I surf a lot, so I was getting bronchitis and pneumonia, and I was eating well, and I was exercising, but my health was suffering. I couldn't understand why that kept happening to me, why I kept getting colds. So my doctor mentioned that I should check out a breathing class, and I did that and had a very weird experience in which I sat in the corner of this cold room here in Cisco and breathed in this rhythmic pattern and broke out into an extreme sweat. Like, I'm not talking about jogging sweat. Like some crazy sweat, hair sopping wet. Other people saw it and, you know, everyone was a bit freaked out, but I felt great. I asked my doctor what had happened and, you know, she made some stuff up that I had a fever or, you know, the room was hot. It was all garbage. She knew it. She had no explanation for it. So as a science journalist, I didn't know what to do with that experience. I don't write solely about my own personal experiences. So I just shelved it away until I met freedivers. And this was probably 7-8 years ago. And these people had managed to use breathing to hold their breath for 7, 8, 9 minutes at a time, to dive down to depths far below what any scientist thought possible. And they told me that breathing could also be used for things other than just diving. It could be used to help heal the body, to heat it, to live a longer life, to change your posture, to actually change the skeletature of your body, like crazy claims. But they were interesting enough, and enough of them seemed at least founded in some kind of science, that I went out and explored it and spent several years in the field just sort of digging through all the archives and the new science of breathing.
That's excellent. And you really did a great job of chapter by chapter, just kind of going through the steps of where it started and then the end, the out, the, you know, all the, when you say breathing, people can glaze over, and I'm sure you've gotten that too. It's like, oh yeah, that thing, like sleep. And, you know, we always talk about sleep should be like selling sex. I mean, it's the best thing on the planet, and breathing is too. And we can get into the nuts and bolts of it, but without spoiling too much, can you give us a little bit about the first chapter, which is what really got me, and kind of your, what started out as an N of one turned into quite a ride?
Yeah. So I'm lucky enough to live in San Francisco, and Stanford's very close to here, about 30 minutes away. And so I convinced the chief of rhinology research, this guy named Dr. Jayak or Nayak, to have some interviews with me. And we had talked over a series of months. Just, I'd go down there, we'd have these long lunches. He'd tell me about all the research he was doing in the nose. And he was so depressed that no one really appreciated the nose or nasal breathing. You know, 25 to 50% of the modern population habitually breathes through its mouth. And he's like, this is a disaster for our health. It causes cavities. It's, you know, on and on and on. And then we started talking some more, and he's authored something like 20 papers a year, some insane number. This guy's just a machine. I said, well, have you ever considered doing an experiment or study into breathing, how different breathing patterns will affect you, nasal breathing versus mouth breathing? And that really wasn't his jam, though he said, he's like, God, that would be so interesting. So I mentioned to him, so many people mouth breathe. We know it's deleterious to health. That's all very well founded and grounded in science. But no one knew how quickly all of that damage came on, and nobody had tested it. So I volunteered for an experiment, and it was just going to be me. And then I thought N1, pretty interesting. Like, you can learn some things from N1, but could be really interesting to have another person. You know, in a perfect world, we would have had 50 people doing this, but Stanford had no money for this, so we had to pay for it out of pocket, which was a complete pain in the butt. Extremely expensive doing these studies. But Nayak dedicated his time, all of his staff's time, to doing this, just out of the kindness and curiosity in their hearts. And the way it was set up is we were going to spend 10 days just mouth breathing. So it's silicone up our noses with tape over that. And this sounds pretty horrendous. It sounds like some sort of jackass stunt. But if you look at the huge amount of people who have chronic sinusitis, who never breathe through their noses, who say they can't breathe through their noses, then, you know, what we were doing is essentially just lulling ourselves into this position that so many people already know. The difference is we were measuring what was happening to our bodies as we were going through it. So, you know, the short version is it was so much worse than anyone possibly expected. If you're looking at sleep, it was a disaster. We immediately started snoring and sleep apnea. We're completely stressed out. Our nervous system function measured by HRV in the gutter. We're breathing way too much. I mean, it goes on and on. Athletic performance suffered. We were just complete wrecks for 10 days. And if you think about what chronic mouth breathing does, by breathing too much does, is it stimulates sympathetic stress, which causes inflammation, which can have all these problems downstream, which is what the vast majority of chronic diseases are, all tied to inflammation and this low-grade chronic stress. And that's what happens when you mouth breathe. And we very clearly showed that. The good part of this study was We then got to spend 10 days nasal breathing and doing the eating the same exact food at the same exact time, same amount of steps per day. So there were no other factors that could have influenced what happened. And all of those problems, all those issues just quickly disappeared. No more snoring, no more sleep apnea, no more stress. Blood pressure went down 20 points. I mean, on and on and on.
In the course of 10 days.
In the course of one day, you know, it came on the first night we plugged our noses. My snoring increased by 1300%. Within 3 days, I was snoring 4 hours throughout the night. We recorded everything, video cameras. I'm actually in the room where we're recording this, but there were video cameras, audio, and we're listening to the audio. At the beginning, we're kind of cracking up. We're like, oh, we sound awful. Then it just got so scary, just this. If you are stressing yourself out like that for a third of your life, I don't care what keto, paleo, vegan diet you're on. I don't care how many marathons you're running. Your body's going to break down. Yeah. And seeing how just the pathway through which we breathe, not even breathing habits, the pathway through which we breathe can so profoundly affect the body, to me, was shocking.
That is. And a lot of our clients that we work with, actually, we have a resident neurologist, Dr. Josh Turknut, who's in Atlanta. He came up with the four quadrant model. And if you've listened to the podcast before, you know what I'm talking about. But this is basically quadrant one is greater than quadrant two, three, and four. One being what these pillars, what are we doing on a daily basis that are like, I like to call them cheap, easy, free. We're breathing. We're sleeping, but we have to get them right. We have to eat right. We have to, you know, these are all things everybody does every day, but now it's how do you do it? How often do you do it? In what style do you do it? And you don't want to end up in quadrant four, which is, you know, surgery or medication. And so let's talk, you know, the one thing that kept sticking out that I've heard it before in referred to by psychonauts, but I've never heard of a pulmonaut. Can you talk about pulmonauts?
That was a name I made up because I was trying to come up with a quick phrase that encompassed actual scientists, breathing therapists, freelancers, laymen, lay people who all, for some reason or the other, came to study breathing, both in their own bodies and in those around them. And so many of these people discover breathing, especially those other three, the breathing therapists or freelancers, because nothing else was working for them. It was this, they were trying different drugs, they were doing different things, nothing else. They fixed their breathing, they fixed their entire lives. And these stories are known, there's data on them, there's x-rays in some cases. So that was just a quick way of summing up people who are exploring breath as a means to heal themselves and look at other elements of human potential through breathing. Some people have really liked being called pulmonauts. Some maybe not so much, but in a joking way, they're like, right. You know, when the doctor's like, didn't know you were going to call me a pulmonaut. I said, that is a high compliment, my friend.
Yeah. It's not a downgrade.
Yeah.
It's great. I love the term because it's more like a brotherhood, sisterhood instead of levels. You have interest in this thing. And we talk about with our clients, there's these things that you do on a daily basis. Let's get them right. Let's get them so they're not causing so much inflammation or oxidative stress. And I like subjects like breathing in that you've been doing it all your life and probably wrong. If you look at the stats and you look at what happens when you do start to, as a first step, start to even become conscious of it or aware of it. For some people, if they can just stop chest breathing, you know, they're much better off. But it was really shocking. And when I read your book, that once the nose is a use it or lose it organ, and you just go into such great detail about the in and the out and what happens and, you know, in relation to nitric oxide and O2 and, or excuse me, CO2. So can you tell us a little bit about, like, number one, why if something is so easy that it doesn't get more attention?
It's a great question. It's something that I was asking myself through the years of researching this book and writing about this stuff. A lot of people would assume, because so much of this research, maybe at least they would think it would, because it was done outside institutions, it was done by these fringe characters, but that's just not the case. If you look at the people really studying this stuff, they were at top universities, top institutions. Look at Yandell Henderson. He was at Yale for 30 years. You know, he's this lion of respiratory health. And none of the stuff that he found, none of these facts he found were disproven. It's just new stuff came around, and medicine had assumed these new things were better than the old things. But now it's so similar to what's happened with food, right? So we eat the same way. We eat these whole foods for millions of years. Then we develop, the industrial age comes, remove the bran and germ from flour, the bran and germ from rice. We got white rice, we got sugar, we can stuff. And we say, oh, this new food, screw the last million years of evolution. This new food's the real stuff. Well, we've seen what an absolute disaster that is to our species. And you'd be hard pressed to find someone who's really into high sugar, high carbs nowadays as a mode of healthy eating. It doesn't exist. So that is completely flipped. But in regards to breathing, I think the same thing is starting to happen, where it was so misrepresented and misinterpreted and under-acknowledged for so long, because I think so many scientists have a hard time believing that air can affect your bone density, that it can affect your mental state, that it can affect your circulation on levels, that it can make you more apt to get cancer, you know, and all of these. And still today, you would be one of the reasons this book was so hard to write is I would talk to, I won't name them, people who are professors at leading institutions who told me carte blanche that how you breathe does not matter, because the human body is amazing. It will always compensate, which is true. The human body will compensate. That doesn't mean it's healthy. I can walk with a sprained ankle. I can still get from point A to point B. What's going to happen to the rest of my body? I'm going to shift my weight. After a while, my back's going to hurt. My other foot's going to hurt. And breathing is the same thing. Just getting by is different than living healthy, as you certainly know, and as you promote with your system. So.
Absolutely. And that's the last part of the name of our health coaching is Thrive. You don't want to just survive. You want to thrive. And getting to the root cause of a lot of these maladies is key. And the more you peel the onion, you get to this thing. It's like, oh, it's all these basic concepts. Josh also talks about, he has a great Angry Birds analogy that we'll put in the show notes, but it's two groups of aliens come down to Earth and they're given the game Angry Birds. One group spends all of its time working on the source code, because if they figure out the source code, then they can crack how to play the game. And the other side just starts playing the game and tries to figure it out. And when the tournament time comes, the ones who've been fiddling with the source code, they don't do so well, because they spend all their time trying to open this thing, turn it upside down, figure out how it's going, instead of just playing the game. That's what we're encouraging, is just get these basic things right. And I hope I didn't butcher that analogy. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It reminds me of another analogy I just heard from Dan Heath. I was listening to a podcast of an author of Upstream. Imagine if you're having a picnic, you and a buddy, and you're by a stream, and you see a kid in the water in this stream. You go out and you fish him out, and he said, oh, thanks. Then another kid comes. Then another kid comes. And so you start waiting in the stream now, and you're just grabbing kids. They just keep coming. And your buddy takes off. You say, well, why don't you help me? And he said, no, I'm going to go upstream and kick the guy's butt who keeps throwing kids in the water.
Right.
So
right.
It was that idea that we're looking at all the leaves of this system, but we're not looking at, that's another cliche, not looking at the real branches or the roots of these core problems. And it is, just as you had mentioned, this stuff is not that complex. And so you don't need a book on biochemistry to understand how poor breathing can really affect you. You can read the book on biochemistry and I can explain that to you, but yeah. you don't really need that, because you can measure your body after just a few minutes before and after breathing healthy and look at the transformation that occurs in your body in just that amount of time.
We can talk about nitric oxide and CO2 and everything like that, but if you just breathe, change from mouth breathing to nose breathing, nasal only, you'll feel it. You'll understand it. You know, you don't have to know the ins and outs.
That's what I think is, a lot of people are very apprehensive. They are quote unquote skeptics. And I was like, so don't accept someone's anecdote. Oh, okay, that's fair enough. Someone says they feel better. Fair enough. Measure it. And look at the studies where they have measured it. And then you can't refute the data. And that's what's, breathing is so easy to measure. Well, it's not like other things where it can take a while. It's so simple and so easy to measure. And if you're getting those benefits after a few minutes, just imagine what benefits you're going to get after a few weeks, a few months.
Absolutely. I started, as soon as I listened to your book, which you did a great job, by the way. I like the narration. That's excellent. A buddy of mine were talking and I said, well, I think I'm going to do the nasal only. I've got a ride that I ride on the road. It's about 21 miles or so, and do all nasal and then not just try to hammer it or anything, just go out nasal breathe. And it's like the first day's like a, let's say it's 15 miles an hour. It was like 15.1, 15.2, and then it's 15.8. And then the other day I got home and I looked and it was like 16. And I was like, that's just so weird, because it's a whole mile an hour faster. It's not that fast, but it's like, it makes a difference. And the great thing is, and this is what we see from our clients too, they're like, I still want to go exercise, but I don't want to be on the couch in the afternoon completely worthless. You know, so what are we doing here? So we have to kind of start digging into that. And it makes all, I feel better. I get off the bike and I feel good. I feel good for the rest of the day. You talked about something earlier, and we talk a lot about this as well, is evolutionary mismatch that goes into the four quadrant model as well. Can you go back and touch on what you found in your research on how this changed? I know the nasal breathing changed the skull, and you kind of gave the brief history of agriculture and all that and how that changed. Can you talk a little bit about what you found? Because I know you got to play with skulls and everything like that. So quite interesting.
Yeah, and this was something that really shocked me, and it still just fascinates me to no end. Because I had always learned in high school biology and anthropology and in college that evolution was always moving forward. It always meant progress, survival of the fittest, Darwinism. You hear that bandied around constantly. And then you start talking to the people who actually study this stuff, and they tell you a very different story. Evolution means change, and it is not always moving forward. It can move sideways, and we can adopt and start actually passing on traits that are not beneficial to our health. And people find this outrageous. When I first mentioned this even to my editor, she was just like, I never heard of this. All you have to do is look at skulls. So something I did a lot of with some real leaders in the field, if you take an ancient skull, anything older than around 400, 500 years old, there's about a 99% chance, even more than that, 99.9% chance, it's going to have perfectly straight teeth. And these people did not have their wisdom teeth removed. They didn't have Invisalign or anything like that. Perfectly straight teeth. Another thing that's remarkable is they have these huge jaws and these forward-growing faces with these huge nasal apertures. These are the two holes that connect the sinus passages to the throat. Huge. And if you take a modern skull, 90% chance it's going to have crooked teeth. Its mouth is going to be smaller. Those nasal apertures are going to be smaller. Sinuses are going to be smaller. So what happens when you have a smaller mouth and smaller sinuses? You're going to have less room to bring in air and to exhale it. So it's not too much of a leap of logic to understand why so many of us have sleep apnea problems, snoring problems, even allergies and some forms of asthma, other respiratory problems. We're struggling just to get breath in. And if you're struggling to do anything, that's bad. If you're struggling to do something 25,000 times a day, that's really bad. And we're starting to understand just how bad it is now. And you don't have to have medically diagnosed sleep apnea or snoring to suffer from these problems. There's something called upper airway resistance syndrome that has been widely studied down at Stanford for 50 years and huge amount of science behind it, that any resistance in the airway, when you're breathing that often, any resistance can stimulate that stress response, that sympathetic response, give you a little squirt of cortisol. You have adrenaline and cortisol. Jeez. You're not able to grow. You know, your blood sugar goes up. You're in this and you're inflamed. Just look at the top diseases killing people, diseases of inflammation. I mean, that's really what they are. And breathing is so closely tied to that. So I had always thought that unhealthy breathing habits were psychological, which is true. If you're anxious, you're not breathing very well. Sometimes environmental, a lot of pollution, can't breathe very well. But that they were anatomical and evolutionary really blew my mind, that we're messed up from the get-go. That doesn't mean we can't improve our breathing with our messed up skulls. I certainly showed that in the book, but it was shocking to me just how far we've fallen off that upward swing of evolution. And look at us now, you know. But the first thing to fix that we need to do is acknowledge that these things happen. Then we have the foundation and understanding to fix them.
Yeah. The problems that arise from the mouth breathing, and now it's one of those things, like you can't stop picking people out in a crowd that are mouth breathing. It's amazing. Airports and Walmarts are, you know, you just walk around and you're like, it's mind boggling. But you did such a great job in the book of making the differentiation of what you're losing by not going through the nose and the heating that happens and in infiltration and you name it. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. And this ties into all those different structures in the nose, that's the slow down air, but it does more than just slow down and pressurize air. Our nose is our first line of defense. So it filters air. That's what your nasal hairs are for. And for these, we have these even tinier hairs called cilia, millions and millions of these that sway in this way, like wheat, to move mucus down. I mean, it's just incredible that the structures and what we've evolved to have here. So all of these things, they humidify air, they filter air, they pressurize air, they condition it. So by the time it gets to our lungs, this air can more readily and more easily be absorbed into our lungs, into our bloodstream. And all of this is not hypothetical at all. So just by breathing air through our noses, you know, we get 20% more oxygen than by breathing air through our mouths. And we have none of these structures in our mouths. Our mouths are like this escape hatch for air. If ever we get clogged in the nose or we're in the water or whatever, yeah, breathe through your mouth, of course. But they have none of the benefits. And I was just reading the study a couple of days ago that showed that nasal breathing more closely ties together different areas in the brain so that they can cohere and function more efficiently. And these areas are the same ones that monitor functions like emotions and logic. So if you see someone with ADHD, huge population of people have ADHD or mouth breathers. Mm-hmm. And these are people that just like anything can throw them off. They get really pissed off about the smallest little thing because their brains are not functioning properly. There's a big study that came out a couple years ago. I need to reread it and really hone the message a little more. But what we already know, what's been widely studied for decades and decades, is the efficiency of nasal breathing for heart rate, for respiratory health, for blood pressure, for nitric oxide. I mean, on and on and on. You're talking for athletic endurance. Yeah, it's not a coincidence that you're able to go longer and harder for the same amount of time nasal breathing. If you think about the efficient 20%, it's a pretty big number. If you're taking 20% less breaths, you're keeping your heart rate down so you can push even harder and go even further under using that same amount of energy. That's what performance is all about, right? You don't want to use energy unnecessarily. So it's just focusing, using the most out of each breath. And Dr. John Duyar and Phil Maffetone, like, these guys have been studying this stuff for decades. This is nothing new. It's just, I don't think it's been widely acknowledged or appreciated in a lot of different circles, but it's starting to right now. You definitely see that happening.
Yeah, we get a lot of folk coming to us who either have used the MAF method or we get them on the MAF method because they are hanging out. If you're divided into five zones, they're hanging out in 3-4, which is what a lot of people do on a treadmill. They huff and puff and they sweat and you feel like you've gotten somewhere, but the wreckage you leave behind is not so great on a daily basis. So the majority of the time you're in zone 1-2, which is great. If you're nasal breathing, that keeps you cognizant of that zone. And then on the occasions you're doing zone 5.
Yeah, I was just like, people think like it's very Western to think, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to kick this gym's ass, I'm just going to work it, and I'm going to sweat so much. It's like, yeah, okay. How are you going to feel tomorrow? And are you going to be able to come back 5 years from now and do the same thing, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? So the idea of efficiency, Americans, I think, aren't too into efficiency. Just look at our cars. The first VW was getting 45 miles per gallon. Now we're getting 19. What's going on here? Yeah. But your body really, you should make it work, but you shouldn't make it overwork to do less. And with exercise, especially, you want to be in that, you want to burn fat, you have to be in an aerobic zone. You need oxygen to burn fat. And if you're just burning sugar, you're going to get hungrier, but you're not going to be burning that oxygen after. So it makes so much more sense to take it, especially at the beginning, to take it lower and slower and work up, build that aerobic base instead of just plummeting into anaerobic all the time, because you're going to get injured. And we've certainly seen that, you know.
Yeah, we've turned, honestly, Olympians, when you tell them that for the next month you're just going to walk, they look at you like, I've come to the wrong place. Yeah. We're going to need to talk to somebody else. And then you get them ramped down a little bit and some of this breathing techniques can obviously come in. But if you're walking and nasal breathing, I mean, there's nothing better. That's just the beginning.
If you think how we've evolved as well, it's like, yeah, sometimes we're running after a tiger, right? Or we're fighting for our lives. No doubt that spike in sympathetic stress, that's what enabled us to stay alive as a species. So important. But for most of the time, we're walking around and we've adapted to that. And it just seems like so many people go from 0 to 100. They're sitting on their ass all day, 8 hours, 10 hours a day, go to the gym, go as hard as they can. And no wonder they're getting injured. It just, duh, makes perfect sense. By the way, I was one of those guys for years and years. I can speak to this, doing sitting in front of a desk going and doing Krav Maga for an hour and a half, just all out and wondering why there was always something wrong with my body.
Right. It just takes a little while to figure these things out. And there's nothing better, as you probably would agree with in writing this book, when the machinery starts breaking down, it really gets your attention. Or if you just get stopped dead in your tracks, which is a lot of folks that come to see us, whether it's gut issues or just the fact that I can't exercise without getting tired. And so you have to just kind of start peeling away at this.
That's how modern, I just have to pipe in one little section
please.
There for my dad, pulmonologist, my brother-in-law, my father-in-law, I should say pulmonologist, my brother-in-law is an ER doc. And the way that our system is built here, you get treatment when you're really sick. If you're half sick, if you're like, you know, I kind of have headaches, there's some tingling in my fingers are cold, it's like, here's your drug, here's your pill. Come back when you're really sick. And you look at sleep apnea especially. You have to have at least 5 apnea events over 10 seconds long to be diagnosed with sleep apnea. So if you have 40 apnea events an hour that are 9 seconds long, you're fine. So I'm sorry, you're not fine. Like, the damage is the same. And Dr. Stephen Park talks all about this. And I think that you can use that analogy into other spheres as well. Just the time to start paying attention to your body and your functions, it should be when you're feeling good, not when you're already wrecked, because it's so much harder to build yourself back up once you're wrecked.
Yeah, absolutely. And well said. I can't add anything to that. That's exactly what we're reaching for. Well, One experiment that is kind of fun, I did it a few years ago and left it alone until I picked up your book again and then started measuring looking at Aura data. I measure HRV in the morning as well. And just started mouth taping again. Can you talk about mouth taping and its benefits? And folks have heard us talk about it on here before, but you know, this is one of those, once you kind of see how the sausage is made, you're like, I got to try this again. I got to do this again. And, you know, I have no complaints at all. Only get, you know, better, deep, restful sleep, all the, you know, it ticks all the boxes. So give us your insights on mouth taping.
So all of that anatomical evolutionary change that's occurred to us, it makes it hard for a lot of us to keep our mouths closed at night. They just tend to, and I'm a perfect example of that. Unless you have this very powerful, strong jaw, it's just going to be apt to open up. So once it opens up, you're going to habitually be taking in air through your mouth. You do that for a third of your life. I had just thought it was normal to go to sleep every single night, have a huge glass of water by my bedside, wake up, parched mouth, go over, drink some water, go back to sleep, wake up, parched mouth. Just thought that this was completely normal, and it's not, because you are 40% of your moisture, you're just offloading by breathing out through your mouth. So this was something that I had heard about, but then it wasn't until I met with the doctor of speech language pathology at Stanford, huge proponent of mouth taping because it vastly improved her breathing. So she was scheduled for nasal surgery to have her nose drilled out because chronic congestion. And then she looked at all of these scans of people who had had laryngectomies, a little hole drilled in their throat because they had cancer or some other problem. And she found between 2 months and 2 years, their noses were completely blocked, 100% blocked.
Completely.
So she thought, oh, the nose is a use it. It's just like any other muscle. It's use it or lose it. So she started taping at night. And what that taping is, it's using just a teeny piece of tape. Don't go on YouTube and look at these bozos with like duct tape or no. This teeny piece of hypoallergenic, very light adhesive tape right in the center of the mouth. And it's just to coax the mouth shut. It's not to stop. Like if you really want to breathe through the sides of your mouth, you can do that. You can remove it easily by just opening your mouth. You can use your tongue to remove it. So this isn't blocking anything. It's just coaxing your mouth shut. And she had a profound change in her sinuses. And so she started prescribing this to her patients. And they had profound changes. So then I started taking it more seriously, talking to other people, and started using it myself. And I can't tell you what a difference it's made for me. I no longer wake. I'm not thirsty at all because I'm saving that 40% humidity. I had not been snoring at all. I had some upper airway resistance syndrome, and I know this from some measurements and recording it. Not snoring, but just some. None of that at all now. Because a lot of this is due when you breathe through the nose, you're inhaling, you've got that negative pressure, and then you're exhaling, you've got the positive pressure. That pushes the soft tissues at the back of the throat back. So it helps tone them to stay back. Another thing is if you open your mouth, your tongue is going to be more apt to go in the back of your throat. When you close your mouth, it's going to be more apt to go to the roof of your mouth and open your airway. So there's a zillion devices that can help you do this. I like the device that we're born with and using a little piece of tape and letting our bodies heal themselves. And, you know, 4 out of 5 people, their spouses have come to me and said, you got to freaking help me. My wife is snoring all night. My husband is snoring all night. 4 out of 5 of them no longer snore, no longer have sleep apnea. I haven't written about this. And one of them showed great improvements. He's still snoring a little bit, but showed great improvements. One other guy, boring you with all these stories, had numerous sleep studies done, moderate to severe sleep apnea, really fit dude, like eats right, everything. His sleep was killing him. So beyond that, and I had him take a pulse oximeter and that would record his sleep throughout the night. Before and after, he's having a ton of sleep apnea events, O2 dropping throughout the night. had him raise his bed about 6 inches, inclined bed therapy, use sleep tape, zero sleep apnea events. So he had been suffering from this for 15 years, and they kept having him do sleep studies where they bring him into a lab, they give him some drug to mellow him out, which would just loosen all those soft tissues, yes. which would make him, I'm like, what is going on here? So the proof's in the pudding there for me, and to know that some real scientists are studying this. Stanford is now, it's just starting up. Ann Kearney is the one doing this study. And I believe she wants to get 200 people with sleep apnea and snoring and gauge mouth tape over years and do CAT scans before and after to see what happens to their airway.
Oh, excellent.
I hope she can find it's hard to find funding for this stuff, but I certainly hope she can.
I'm sure people are, you know, the non-sexy stuff. They're like, mouth taping's here. You know, it's like anytime you say it to somebody, you have to wait for them to stop laughing or go seriously.
But if you look at the science to it, if you look at what's really happening, then it all checks out. I did an interview with Dr. Mark Berhenny, available for free for everyone on the site, where he gets into the real specifics and the benefits.
Excellent. We'll link to that in the show notes. Yeah. I appreciate that. So do you still measure, or what do you measure now? And what kind of knock-on effects are you seeing since you went through the most horrendous experiment ever?
Well, people think that just because I wrote a book about breathing, I'm now like the best breather on the planet. This is so sadly false. My job as a journalist is to go into these worlds and talk with the experts and try to get the most objective story I could possibly piece together. And that's what I really tried to do in this book. There's so much trash talking on both sides, on the academic side, scientific side, but also more on the new agey side. And nothing's going to move forward doing that. You know, I think that you have to look at these things. And I had no slant. I'm not an ENT. I'm not a doctor. I'm not selling anything. So I could call BS on things that did not check out. But I could also say, this has a solid scientific foundation. These are the people working on it. Here are the 20 studies showing it. And they're all available for free on my website.
Yourself.
If you want to check it out. So, I mean, that's a long way of saying this stuff is extremely complex to understand. And we still don't know many of the aspects of breathing, especially when you get into the real human potential stuff. But that to me is what makes it so exciting and interesting, that we're still on this voyage to really understand the human body and exactly how it works. And if at any time we think we have it figured out, trust me, we're wrong. Knowing that 50% of what we thought we knew about science, medical science 50 years ago, wrong. 50% of what we know now is going to be proven wrong in 50 years. And this is what a doctor told me. So this isn't my little aphorism that I made up. This is how science works. There should be no finger pointing. It's things change as we accumulate more knowledge. So let's just go into this. And if it's measurable, we can study it. If we can study it, we can prove it right or wrong. So why not study mouth tape? It's measurable. We know that people have huge benefits from it. We know the physiology, what happens when you breathe through your nose. It shouldn't be so silly. Nonetheless, people will still poo-poo it, but you don't pay attention to that. You just pave your way and try to go forward and help people, help improve themselves through these means.
Excellent. Yeah, we're big proponents of the process. There's no finish line with this.
Yeah.
So try mouth tape. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't, then move on and find the next thing that may help you.
It's free, or, you know, it's going to cost you about a half a cent. So if it doesn't, also, I will mention, the first night's going to suck. So is the second night. So is the third night. But like most things, once you get used to it, then you make it all the way through the night. You're like, oh my God, wow, I feel great. And now I travel when I travel, not too much nowadays.
Not right now.
But I have tape in every single suitcase because I now have a hard time truly going to sleep and feeling like I'm having really refreshing sleep without it.
Well, James, I want to be very cognizant of your time. I very much appreciate the time you've taken to explain some of the in greater detail of what you've researched. I would encourage everyone to check out the awesome bibliography on your website. We will, of course, link to that. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with as we part here? How can we get in touch, find you on socials, that thing?
Sure. I'm at the website is mrjamesnestor.com. Some other person took James Nestor, so I had to put the MR there. People thought it was some cutesy thing. It really wasn't. And if you want to go straight to the book, you do mrjamesnestor.com/breath. There's tons of videos there. There's Q&As. There's the bibliography. If you don't believe some of these outrageous claims about how people can heat up their bodies through breathing or straighten scoliotic spines, the videos are there. So you can check that out. I'm trying to get better at the social media thing. I'm a bit of a dinosaur, but I'm trying on Instagram and Facebook. I'm posting things on occasion.
Yeah, your posts have been great. And again, I encourage everybody to head over, check these out, carve out half a day or so, and because you're going to get lost. And it's awesome. And once you start incorporating some of these simple things, if you want to dive deep, you can dive deep. But if you want to just get started, then three words, shut your mouth. Is that right?
Shut your mouth and stand up straight. That's a good starting point. Just like mom used to say.
That's right. James, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.